Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Let's start with the rooster, Eddie.
It's back.
We took a couple weeks off, a little vacation, a little holiday.
We haven't done a show for 2 weeks.
I know. That's the longest time we haven't done a show.
You were sick.
I was sick last week. Oh. And then Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It was just too hectic. How was your Thanksgiving?
It's fine. It's good. Good
Thanksgiving. Did you cook anything?
Yeah, make dinner.
What did you
make? Turkey, mashed potatoes.
Standards. Just, I like them.
What'd you do?
I tried something new that I had at a holiday party.
Why?
I did like a
you know what?
It was actually cool. Mm. It was I just took brie cheese, some apricot preserves, some pecans and some honey, and then toasted some toast, and that was the appetizer, and then Bonnie and my mom did everything else. I just did the appetizer.
Did you do it at your house or your parents' house?
Yeah, we did it at our house.
Nice.
So it was you know what? I like doing it like that so my mom gets a break because she's done it so many years. So it was fun.
Where'd everybody park?
You know what? It's great on the holidays. It's
really?
Actually, yeah, it's amazing. It's just it's the work weeks where there's no parking.
Your neighborhood sucks for parking.
Your neighborhood's pretty bad too.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's horrible.
Your neighborhood actually is the only saving grace is your driveway,
yeah,
which I park in. But everybody goes there for Runyon Canyon, right?
Yeah, it's awful.
Did you do a little Thanksgiving Runyon hike?
No.
Did you see any movies?
Let me see. No. I had shows in Tucson Friday after Thanksgiving.
That must have been awesome. Was it cold?
Not too bad. It was like it was here, 60s, 70s.
You do that every year, I think, right?
Well, it's trying to.
Causing havoc.
Something like that. Not every year. Not at Thanksgiving, but I go to Tucson like once a year.
And how was it? How were the shows?
Fun.
Same club?
Yeah, Laughs Comedy Cafe.
Did you take the whole fam?
Yeah, I took the whole family. In-laws.
In-laws too?
In-laws went with us.
How was that?
Fine.
They came and saw your comedy?
Yeah, they came and saw one show.
Were they just like, huh, yeah, that penis like, joke, a little too far.
She made a horrible choice. It's not too late.
Oh, that's funny.
Get out of this.
Do you get a little bit, what's the word, like stage fright just with doing your act in front of?
No.
No? Not at all? Not like, there's not an ounce what will they think of me after this joke?
I prefer to perform in front of people I don't know.
Yes,
I prefer to be an audience of strangers.
Right, right.
But once I'm on stage, I don't give a shit who's in the audience type of thing.
So like, you never look at them and see the reactions, nothing?
No. Because my job is to make people laugh. Those people paid to be there. That's my job.
Right.
So
what did they say anything about any of your X-rated jokes?
No, my act's not that filthy.
It's actually, dude, you know what I noticed when I saw you with a bunch of acts? Everybody takes it to that extreme, like... There was not one act that didn't take it to some extreme of raunchiness on some level, either with language or like, which is okay. Like, I don't mind that, you know, but it's like I see so many different comedians when like you see them on TV or when you see they have to like clean it up.
Oh, yeah. You can't drop F-bombs on the Tonight Show.
So I was going to ask you, this is one of the questions I want to ask you. Like, if you're so used to doing, not you personally, or maybe you personally, if you're so used to doing an act where you're doing all this X-rated stuff or crazy language or whatever, how do you clean it up for a TV spot?
You just take out the dirty words.
But is it? How do you know it's going to work? Because everything's about like going out there and doing it and making sure it's, like wood shed it out.
No, as long as the content of the material is not filthy and X-rated, if you're just dropping F-bombs just to...
Nonstop?
No, just to make the joke more colorful. Like sometimes people just go in and cuss, but the essence of the joke isn't a dirty joke, or the bit's not a filthy bit, but you just happen to be cussing while you're telling the story. You can just easily take the cussing out.
Was your boy there?
Yeah.
So you heard the joke about him in there?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He's heard joke. We watched the other night. I watched Christmas Vacation with him.
That's a great movie.
And that's there's dirty words in that.
What's your favorite Christmas movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
You know, I think I told you this last year.
And I'm an atheist.
I've never seen it.
It's still my favorite Christmas movie.
It's on my list to see it this year. I've never seen it.
That's too bad.
I've seen Christmas Story. I've seen Christmas Vacation. I've seen Home Alone.
Have you never seen It's a Wonderful Life?
You know what? It was such an old movie that it just never made me want to watch it. But
it's
now,
long.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
You got to get through it. Yeah. But
it's on my DVR right now.
Pays
I just
off.
Taped it.
Yep. The end, it all pays off.
And it's worth it? Do you think it's a movie that... If you watch it as an adult way later than when you watched it as a kid, it would happen.
Yeah, I didn't watch it until I was in college. It was the first time I saw it. I didn't watch it as a kid. I didn't grow up watching it.
Okay. So then you were probably like me.
And the more I watched
it. What made you watch it?
I only watch it once a year because I'd heard, like, oh, this is the best Christmas movie ever.
Yeah, that's what I said, too.
When I first watched it, I was like, eh, okay. But then I watch it every Christmas since, and I watch it once a year, and every year it's better. And I look forward to watching it just because the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Really?
You have to watch the whole movie for that last 10 minutes to hit you. But if you watch the whole movie, that last 10 minutes will hit you.
I wanted to ask you, have you seen Where to Invade Next?
No.
It's a Michael Moore documentary?
No.
I watched this movie, and it blew my mind because Michael Moore goes to all these different countries, and he wants to adopt philosophies that the United States is just out to lunch on. So one of them is, like, the average American gets maybe 2 weeks off paid vacation for a whole year. So he goes to Italy first, and he talks to this couple, and he's like, oh, so how much time do you get off paid vacation? He's like, they're like, oh, we get a couple weeks here, a couple weeks here. They get about 8 to 12 weeks paid vacation.
I was when I was in Tucson, one of the guys in the hotel room, I was in the pool with Colton, and there was a guy from Germany who was visiting the U.S. It's like his 25th time visiting the United States because that's how much they travel, and he loves this country, and he goes every. He's been everywhere. He's seen more of America than Americans have, and he's like he gets about a month.
Because we have no time to do it.
He gets about a month off every year, like a whole month,
and that's low. That's low.
But he has like 30 days every year, and I was like, Americans get 2 weeks if we're lucky.
It's crazy. And then he went to a school in France, and they get a 4-course meal for their. And this is like at one of the poorest schools in France.
Yeah.
They get a 4-course meal for all the meals in schools. Then he showed them like what the kids get here.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's not food, you know. Like the kids are saying.
Well, then freaking Speaker of the House today said free food for children, for free school lunches for children, leave them with an empty soul.
Yeah.
Because that's so much of a dipshit we have in our government.
No, it's crazy. It was pretty eye-opening. And they went to Finland also to talk about the schools.
Oh, in France, if you get pregnant, the government gives you...
Time off. For 6 months.
But they also give you a live-in nanny person to help you raise
In Italy, you get 6 months paid leave.
But they let someone comes into your home and helps you with your child for months.
That's amazing. I mean, I don't know why we are out to lunch on all of those... concepts that are not
because we're not ruled by the corporations. Republicans are ruled by the corporation.
I know, but it was a little frustrating watching.
You got to have everybody working, making money.
Yeah, but you don't. That's
to make
the thing,
those people rich.
That's the thing. Like this Italian thread company, they do all the clothes for Dolce and Gabbana. I mean, they do a lot of designs and do a lot of supply for them. They were like, I mean, their productivity is like right in line with some of the biggest companies here. And they're like, how much more money do you need? And like, why would you not want to have like a real relationship with even the bottom tier worker? Like, it's the most human thing to do.
The
it's
just philosophy like, in this country
oh my
is so
God,
screwed
I know,
up.
It's crazy. So I want to talk to you about that. And then I just like was doing all this research on Stephen King. And man, I would watch this documentary, this interview with Frank Darabont. Guy who did what's it called, Shawshank Redemption and Green Mile, and I didn't know Stephen King wrote all of that stuff.
Yeah,
so I just started researching all the Stephen King stuff, and I'm like, this guy is the most prolific.
Yeah, it's not just
badass.
It's not just horror films,
dude. And dude, he's also Richard. What's his alias? His he's also another. I can't remember the name. It's Richard something, but. He wrote The Illusionist. So he's got like a whole another alias of books that are being sold. I mean, he's just a badass. So
yeah.
I was doing a lot of that over downtown.
Well, that's good.
Downtown. I got a cool announcement real quick
before we
welcome our guest. The song I wrote for Ziggy Marley's album, the album is up for Best Reggae Album for
nice.
Grammys. They just announced it today.
Congratulations.
So I may get my first Grammy certificate, Eddie.
Congratulations.
Which is nuts, which is crazy.
If it wins Grammy, do you get an actual Grammy? You don't.
I don't get an actual Grammy because it's for the album of the year, or reggae album.
Do you get to go to the Grammys?
I get to go to the Grammys. I have to pay for a ticket, which is kind of dumb because it's just like so much. They're pretty expensive tickets, but I'm gonna go because
you have to.
Well, it's just good to go to show face for a record and show support. Yeah. And I think I get a certificate no matter if it wins or not.
Yeah.
But obviously, the better ones if you wait until after the award show. So, without further ado, though, I think our special guest has arrived. Mr. Derek Frank, say hello. Our studio audience loves you already.
Oh, man.
See that?
Yeah. Wow.
I've known Derek for maybe about 15, almost 20 years,
Something like that. You used to rehearse in my studio.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Day. Like in the early days of
Early days of the band. I'm going to have you step up a little closer just because I want to hear your sultry voice.
There you go.
So Derek is one of the best musicians in L.A., and I'm not just saying that.
Stop.
No. He is a badass bassist. You also play, I think you play keys, too. You fiddle with some other stuff.
I play key bass.
Key bass.
Yeah, you know.
Do you ever hear somebody doing, like, keyboard, bass, and just you're like, nah, it's not a bass?
No, I'm into it, man. I mean, if you listen to, you know, a lot of the Stevie stuff, Michael Jackson stuff, a lot of the stuff from the 70s, man. I mean, there is just, like, some seriously dope bass stuff going on with some analog synths, and I love it. Like, I embrace that wholeheartedly. I've never been one of those, like, purists that's like, you know, oh, synth bass, that's stupid. You know, play real bass. I love it. I'm way into it.
I was on the verge of being a purist until I started listening to all those old records again. I'm like, oh, it's not real bass. Because in your imagination, you're just like, oh, yeah, it's probably bass. And then you really listen, and you're like, oh, that's not a real bass. That's synth bass.
Well, you know, Stevie Wonder, I mean, he's one of my biggest bass influences, and he's playing, you know, synth bass. And Greg Phillinganes, playing on all the Michael Jackson
stuff. He's one of the best. He's Greg Phillinganes. He played all the keys on Michael Jackson stuff. Yeah. He did Chaka Khan. Have you heard Chaka Khan's version of it's a Beatles tune?
We can work it out.
We can work it out.
That is one of the dopest bass lines.
It's the greatest bass line. It is
so killing.
So badass. Yeah. But anyways, let's talk about Derek.
Yeah.
Derek has been on tour with Shania Twain.
Yep.
You've been playing. I'm going to let you just talk. Just ramble up. There's so many names. I was like looking at his bio. I'm like, man, I'm not going to remember all these names. I'm just going to let him just rattle them off. Just quick list of some of the people that you've been playing with over the years.
Okay, well, I'm currently playing with the band Air Supply.
Nice.
All Out of Love and all those awesome love songs from the 80s.
That's right.
Where does Air Supply play?
Everywhere. And actually, you know, I'm not even supposed to be here right now. It's kind of like the movie Clerks, you know? I'm not supposed to be here. I was on tour with them. We literally just circled the globe. Unfortunately, we had to cut our tour short. We had to cancel the last couple weeks. One of our team members had some health issues and just kind of had to get off the road. But we literally circled the globe. We went from LA to South America.
Wow.
A bunch of shows there. Chile to Tel Aviv, did three shows in Israel.
Wow.
Then went from Israel to Guam. That was some long flights there. And then we were supposed to go all over Asia, but then unfortunately had to cancel, and I just got home Friday.
That is you must be just like all over in time zone land.
Oh, man, throughout the whole tour I had no idea what day or what time it was. But yeah, it's I just started playing with them this year, and just like you said, like where do they play? Like I didn't know they were.
Yeah, so like do they like what the size of the venues and stuff? I didn't even.
Dude, we did arenas.
Really?
Arenas, theaters. That's like crazy. In the States, it's mostly theaters.
Yeah,
but in Europe, they're huge, right?
Actually, what's weird is they don't play Europe. Right. Europe is the only place they don't play.
Why is that?
I'm not really sure. I haven't really asked them about that, but everywhere else, like I got called for the gig in June. My friend Aaron McLean is the guitarist and MD, and they had a situation where they needed somebody to fill in. So I went to fill in. I went to New Zealand, Australia, and Hong Kong.
Wow.
And it was like one of those situations where like no rehearsal, no audition, just like, hey, can you do this tour? All right, learn these tunes. Then I showed up and my first time ever playing with them was an arena in New Zealand.
That is crazy. In Auckland or where? Where were you?
That was Christchurch.
Yeah, okay.
But we did Auckland and Wellington. And you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they're the greatest guys ever. It's been like such a blast playing with them, and the audiences are amazing. Like, people love Air Supply.
Oh, yeah. That was like the soundtrack for Love from like 82 to like 87, 88,
wow.
I'd say.
The ladies go crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
Or maybe they're going crazy.
Maybe.
But yeah, it's been a really fun gig, man. Been doing it since June, and they don't stop. They go all the time. You know, they, and I don't think they've ever stopped.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's
that's crazy because like you just really some fun. Of these bands you just forget about. You know, they're still out there like selling out arenas around the world. Like it's just crazy.
Yeah, I think I love that. I love that because you just don't know how far their reach is.
Like I'll still hear like Rats playing somewhere. I'm like, really?
Oh, yeah.
And actually, when we were flying out, I ran into a couple friends of mine who were playing with Rat.
That shit like blows my mind. Like I haven't.
They're on their way to Wales. Yeah,
that's crazy. Just blows my mind.
But
they're
it's like
still
a version
playing.
Of Rat. I think there's two Rats. Yeah. Right now.
It's always a different version of the. Yeah, like how much is the original Air Supply still there?
Well, Air Supply was always Graham Russell and Russell Hitchcock. They were Graham's kind of the main songwriter. Russell is the lead singer, and it was always basically them. Like
right.
Graham and Russell are Air Supply, and they've had a band built around them. That's kind of what it's been.
Wow.
Like. And that's what it is now. There's a 4-piece band backing them up,
and they have a ton of records. Like they still make records every now and then, right?
Oh man, Graham still writes songs. Like he still brings in new songs, and we play them. I think they said they have like 25 full records now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's
I got to just give a round of applause just for that. 25 albums. That's a lot of work.
Yeah,
amazing. Absolutely. And did you have to learn all the tracks? Like,
well, no. I mean, this show is about an hour and a half, hour 40 minutes, and we've been kind of adding tunes here and there as we go. They change up the set every now and then. So it's like, I don't know, 14 or 15 songs, something like that.
You were probably like at the dances when they had the Air Supply songs. Because
I was a kid, and I remember those tunes. They were huge.
You know? Do you ever like flashback, like while you're playing, you're like, oh, yeah, there was Cindy on the dance.
I mean, kind of like that. You know, I always just think about it. I'm like, sometimes I'm on stage and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm playing with Air Supply. Like, I remember being a kid and like my sister playing this music, you know?
And I remember right before that, you were on the road with Shania Twain for a while.
Yep.
And I saw all these killer pictures of him with like fireworks coming out of his bass.
It was a rock and roll show for sure. It was like a Kiss show with Shania Twain music.
That's
I mean, they had tons of pyro and the lighting in the video was like, I mean, they went big. They went big. That must have been fun.
I'm sure not every tour is like that, so it must have been so different for you.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was the first tour I've done with pyro, and I loved it. Like, I mean, yeah.
Did you ever make any requests like, hey, can I get some like blue flames coming out of my bass tonight?
No, but the one thing I wanted to do that I never got to do was at the beginning of the tour, when we were putting everything together, doing production rehearsals, the two guitarists got to hook up a little pyro thing to the headstocks of their guitar. And in a little break, there's like one little hit where they'd point their guitars up to the sky and shoot sparks out of their guitars. And I was like, oh, I
want
to do
that.
I want that. But unfortunately, like in rehearsals, they got a little too close to Shania once, and that was the end of the headstock pyro.
She's like, oh, guys, that's it.
Yeah, we're done. Cut that. Yeah. But
you should have been like, guys, you ruined it for the rest of us.
Yeah. But yeah, it was cool.
All right, so we got Air Supply, Shania Twain. I want you just to rattle off a couple names, and then we're going to go back to the beginning of how you got into music.
The beginning. All right. Yeah, so that's been the last 2 years, Shania and Air Supply. And also, well, right now I'm in five bands. I was just thinking about that today.
That's crazy.
So I'm also working with a female sax player / singer named Mindy Abair. And we have a kind of a band with some other guys that go by the name of the Bone Shakers. So it's Mindy Abair and the Bone Shakers. And I've been with them, been with Mindy about 6 years. And then we brought the Bone Shakers in, I think, almost 2 years ago now. And we did a live record last year, live in Seattle.
We did a
4-night run at a club up there, recorded the whole thing, made a record of it. So I've got a lot of stuff coming up next year with that band as well. There's a band called The Dirty Diamond that I play in. It's an original rock band.
That's a good name. I like that.
The Dirty Diamond. You know, I honestly don't even know the significance of it. I joined the band about 2 years ago.
It's probably better you don't know.
Yeah, right. There could be some story that I just don't want to hear.
Eddie's got a lot of dirty diamonds.
No, but it's a really fun band. Really talented songwriter, Sam Babayan. He's the front man of it. Guitarist Fernando Perdomo, and then Shay Godwin.
I know he's going to be a guest in a couple weeks.
Oh, cool! Yeah, Fern's in it, and Shay Godwin is playing drums.
The last time I played with Shay, we did a gig for Carlos Santana with Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter.
No big deal.
And it was an amazing. I mean, it really was. And I'm still like chasing that sound because it was like an 18 piece band. So killer. Every time I see Shay, I'm like, man. I miss playing with you, man. Let's get some more shows like that. You know?
Yeah, Shay's amazing. Shay and I go way back. We go back to high school. You know,
we're going to talk about that. Let's actually go there. Let's go there right now. Okay. So okay. you started playing. How old were you when you started playing bass?
It was like 13 or 14. It was kind of the summer in between 8th and 9th grade, I think.
What was the trigger? Like, did you hear a song? Or
it was, I think with a lot of us that play instruments, people say, oh, how did you choose that instrument? And as you know, a lot of times that instrument chooses you.
Yeah.
You know, it finds you somehow. For me, like, I was always into music, and I wanted to play guitar and finally convinced my parents to buy me a guitar. So I had this, you know, cool Strat copy and played it for a few months. And then one day I was in my local music store, and they had a bass up on the wall, and I was like, what's that? And they're like, oh, that's a bass guitar. I was like, oh, can I check it out? So the guy put it in my hands. I started messing around with it, and like it was like, all right, this is my instrument. Like, it was kind of immediate. Like,
I got to tell you, I've been playing a little bit of bass on recordings, just like messing around.
Cool.
It's becoming my favorite instrument.
It's fun.
Like, I totally get how you made that switch because, I mean, guitar is always going to be like my thing, same with piano, but I've been messing around with bass, and I'm like, dude, I get it. I get
it's cool.
Like, and you know, I just did a session with David Ryan Harris, and he was playing bass on a track, and he was like, it's becoming my favorite instrument. I'm like, dude, I know. Now I'm like envious. Like, of all every bassist I know, I'm like, why didn't you tell me the knowledge?
It's just kind of fun to like lay down that foundation and have that power to take the band where you want to take it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the most important instrument in a band. Like, I really think it is.
I'm gonna tell every band member that I play with that.
No, you know,
this is the most important.
No, instrument. I swear to God, it is.
What you guys are doing,
because it's the only instrument that is groove and controls melodic textures.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
yeah.
Like chords
and the harmony and stuff.
Like drums will never do that. Drums will keep the beat.
Right.
But that's the only instrument that does both at the same time, and there's no other instrument that does it like that.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing anything else. Yeah.
See that, Eddie? Mm-hmm. It's time to play bass, Eddie. Yeah. Time to pick it up. Pick it up!
It's too late for me.
Actually, you know what? Maybe your kid can start.
Maybe.
He's like, no.
I don't know. Seems expensive. I have a lot invested in Legos.
Do you remember what the first project or the thing that you got involved in when you started playing bass?
First project was probably just, you know, my little high school garage band.
Did you do like a jazz band or anything like that?
Later on. I mean, the jazz thing came a little later. I mean, at first I was just wanting to play, you know, Led Zeppelin, Van Halen. Probably some Beatles, what else? Some hair band stuff, Guns N' Roses. Like, you know, I was in a garage band, you know, just had my buddies in high school that we'd get together and jam. Never, like, did any gigs or recorded. I think we played
just
a backyard
played.
Party once, but, you know.
Yeah, but those were the most exciting.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
Because they're like the first sparks.
Yeah, you're discovering and learning together, and you probably sound terrible. Like, I'd hate to hear those recordings, you know. And we must have driven my friend's mom nuts, because we used to rehearse at my friend Decker's house, and yeah, and his mom would let us rehearse there, and we probably sounded awful.
And you're just like, we sound awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. You look back on those days, and it's just, it's amazing. You know?
Did you ever, like, put a band together in high school and, like, start trying to play gigs? Like, when was the time where you started playing professional gigs?
Yeah, it was in high school. And interestingly enough, my first professional gigs were jazz gigs.
Hmm.
They're jazz gigs and, like, musical theater things. Like, I in my high school, I was playing in the jazz band. And you know, learning to read and all that was—I was kind of, I think I was the only bass player in school. So I played bass in concert band because they didn't have enough tubas. I played bass in marching band with a wireless.
Wow!
Again,
really?
Didn't have enough tubas, so I was like marching around the field.
Wait! I've never seen a marching band with a bass. Have you?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen.
I don't think I've ever seen
that. It was my band director's idea. Who I'm still very much in touch with, and he's like, you know, we don't have enough sousaphones for the marching band, like. Would you be into playing bass and we could get a wireless? And they put an amp on the sideline, and I marched around in my little high school marching band uniform playing
bass.
That's
crazy. That's remarkable. I wish you gotta send me footage of that. I want to see that.
Back then. Yeah, I don't know if there's any video, but like all those kind of things led me to learn how to read and stuff, which led me to doing gigs professionally. Like I was in Cleveland, Ohio at the time. And I would get called to do these like musical theater productions, so I'd be just kind of like a pit orchestra guy, because I was a bass player.
And were you doing upright or electric?
All electric. I never really got deep into the upright thing. I had a couple stabs at it, and I play electric upright, but I never really got deep with the upright thing.
Well, you just kind of go where the work is, That's kind of
It's kind of like that, and also just we were talking about connecting to an instrument. Upright's one of those instruments that I never really connected with, you know, like when I was shedding it and when I did have an upright for a while and taking lessons and all that, like when I was doing all that, I was doing it for the sole purpose of getting work and making more money. Like, okay, if I play upright, I'll get more work. But it wasn't like, I love playing this. I love spending hours playing this. Whereas with electric bass, I mean, I practiced because I wanted to.
Right.
Back in the day, I'd play 8 hours a day because
I wanted
to.
And it's such just a cool sounding instrument. I mean, both are dope.
Yeah, both are dope.
I've tried with messing around with upright. That is a tough instrument. If it doesn't gravitate towards you right away, like it's such a big instrument, Eddie, that whenever I see like a cat walking around in New York with one of those, I'm like, you're committed, dude, because that thing is so big. And they'll say, "Oh, I've got a wheel and stuff." I'm like, "Dude, getting into a subway and going cross town in the snow with a huge upright bass." I'm like, "Dude, you are a champ." Because most drummers, all the drums are in clubs.
Right, right.
The basses, the upright basses in New York. I feel for you, man. I feel for you.
That's the definition of suffering for your art.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Yeah. All right, so when did you start wanting to make records and get into the songwriting process or studio stuff?
It's interesting. Everything just kind of like, everything I've done, it's just been this evolution, you know? Like I was saying before, like I started kind of gigging in high school, like doing the theater stuff and doing the jazz stuff. And, you know, I got really into the jazz thing in high school and college to where, like, you know, that was kind of mainly what I was doing. And I don't know, I was just kind of a working musician for a long time. And I still am. I mean, that's how I make a living. But, like, you know, I did cruise ship gigs in between, you know, for my summer breaks throughout college. And I wasn't really going for being, like, in a band or being, you know, a rock star or whatever back then. I was just like, you know what, I want to play my bass and make a few dollars doing it and play good music with good people. And I just kind of just kept doing that until I found different projects I was into. I didn't even start my own project until 2009.
Like, why is that?
My own solo project. I don't know. I think I was just waiting for the time, I guess. I mean, I've been pretty busy since I've been in L.A. just playing other people's projects, being that hired gun, being the working musician.
Did you grow up in Miami? Where did you grow up?
I haven't grown up yet.
Same with Eddie and I.
But I grew up.
Eddie still wears Superman pajamas.
Yes, I do. Don't show him to me.
Footy with the cape.
Right. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I lived there till I was about 10. We moved around everywhere. I was all over the East Coast. So I didn't, you know, I got to Miami for school. I never, like, lived in Florida. My parents did move to Florida after I was in school, but I never really lived there, you know.
What musical theater shows did you play? That's interesting to me. I never even knew you had that in your background.
I was back in the day. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, it's not like Broadway. These are, like, local.
No, but still, but it's still the music. You're taking in a lot of those orchestrations.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's the thing that you don't realize you're doing at the time, you know.
That stuff really got my reading chops together, too, you know. What did I do back in the day? God, I think like 42nd Street and
those are classics.
Bye Bye Birdie.
Oklahoma. I did Bye Bye Birdie. I did some of that.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Eddie told me like he never did like musical theater or any of that stuff like back in the day, but like that was like a staple thing. That's what you did in my neighborhood. It's like you did chorus, you did musical theater, you did theater, and you did sports. You did all of those kind of things. So like we had jocks in our musicals. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just constantly playing sports and stuff like that too. But it was just.
Where are you from again?
I'm from Arcadia, so it's cool. Maybe it's just because of there's so much industry here that it just made sense to always have that as a as a thing. But I don't think schools like that now, because they're losing funding, are like that. But it's interesting when I hear players coming from that background, because those shows are what made me want to do original music and also do jazz and funk and soul and some of that stuff.
It just exposes you to a lot of things, and you play with a lot of musicians, and you're trading ideas and talking about things, and all that influences you and makes you the musician you are today. You know, like those kind of things weren't the things I was pursuing. Like I wasn't like, I want to do musical theater. You know,
right.
When
of course.
When I was 16, you know, but they were just things that I just got thrown into. Like I just got called for them, and you know.
Well, it's the challenge, though. It's like, that's the cool thing. It challenges you in a different way.
Yeah.
I want to play something that you worked on recently. What do you want to play us first?
Well, I think I sent you a song by the Dirty Diamond. We've been hard at work on a new album, so this is kind of like one of the newest things I can play for you.
Awesome. We love that. Yeah, world debut, world premiere?
Yeah, it's a single that just got released a couple months ago, but this is kind of one of the one of the newer things.
We love that.
Yeah, really fun band, and yeah.
All right, let's play it.
What's it called?
It's called Changes.
Changes. All right, here we go.
Goes mild.
That's right. No, it went wild, man. Come on. Even Eddie's just like ready to do backflips.
Yeah.
He might even comb his hair for the next show.
We'll see. I doubt it.
We'll see. So when you work with various bands and you're coming up with arrangements, are you kind of like thinking about sounds, tones, vibes, all of it when you're kind of working? Like, do you want to just blend in or do you want to kind of direct where a song's going?
All of the above, you know. I mean, everybody has their own personal style that's going to get into the song, you know, no matter what, you know. So, yeah, if I'm, like, creating something with a band, I'm thinking tone, vibe, sound. I want to be myself but also serve the song, obviously. Yeah. You know, you're playing for the song, you know, playing what's appropriate. So that's the main thing is, like, how do I support the song? How do I make the song interesting? How do I make it sound better? Is it a kind of thing where I just need to play whole notes or just, like, you know, eighth notes with a pick? Or does it need something more than that, you know?
Yeah, that's the most amazing thing that, I've learned over the years is when players, like, when they lay out, like, that that knowledge of knowing, when it's not about overplaying or just, you know what I mean? Like, there's something, like, about what a player knows the importance of space.
Sure.
It's like, I always am just like, dude, you just know. You're like a Jedi. It's like, no, it's being so zen about music.
Sure.
You have that. Yeah. You definitely have that. Like, you know when to play. And the crazy thing is, Eddie, this guy has chops for days. But you could go see three different shows in three different bands, and he won't let it rip. Maybe you'll hear it in maybe a bar. And it's just like, oh, that guy can play. You can just hear it. But that's what I love about bass players that are seasoned vets. You know, like, they know what's up. Real quick, you have a show at the Troubadour with this band.
Yeah, Dirty Diamond. Our last show of the year is December 16th at the Troubadour.
It's a great venue.
It's one of our favorites. I love playing the Troubadour. I mean, it's, you know, it's got so much history, so much vibe. The layout of the place is great.
I always think about the rubber floor. Do you know what I'm talking about on the stage?
I didn't even realize.
Like, those little things about certain venues or festivals that I just, like, when I think of a venue or a festival, I just pick one characteristic. Yeah. Maybe it's a view.
About the details.
And, dude, the Troubadour, when I think of the Troubadour, I think of there's, like, rubber circles on the floor. And it's a very different stage and a feeling stage when you stand on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is also why the room just feels different, you know what I mean? Because you're in a different place than any other venue, you know what I mean? Yeah, and then it's just character. Historical because of the layout, and you have people above you, you have people below you. Yeah. It's got that little, like, hide up, like the backstage area love,
you got
the little loft.
Room up there, little loft, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's one of my favorite venues to play in L.A.
That's awesome. Really cool. I wanted to ask you, too, who are some of your biggest influences as far as players?
Let's see, there's so many. Obviously, Paul McCartney, he's a huge one, you know. Paul McCartney, John Paul Jones, Pino Palladino, James Jamerson, you know, from the Motown stuff, for sure. We mentioned Stevie Wonder earlier, like all synth bass playing, Greg Fillinganes. Like, I mean, I've transcribed bass lines, you know, Stevie and Greg's bass lines, like synth bass lines. Who else?
Any Victor Wooten? Any Jaco Pastorius didn't say?
Oh, definitely Jaco. Like, Jaco has definitely gotten into, you know, my jazz infusion kind of stuff. You know, I try not to let the Jaco get into the rock stuff, you know, but yeah, Jaco, huge influence. Marcus Miller, huge influence. Rocco Prestia from Power Power. Verdeen White. Bernard Edwards from Chic. Man, there's so many. And Victor's one of those guys that, like, I love what he does. I never considered him an influence because I never tried to do what he does.
Right, right.
But I always appreciate it. Like, there are a bunch of bass players like that I really dig, but I never considered them influences because I never, like, just never.
Pino Palladino, if I had to pick one bassist that can just play everything and he does it, like, more tasteful than anybody, he's, like, my number one.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, one of my role models. Like, he's a guy who, like, I would love to have.
You know, he can't read music?
He doesn't need to.
I know. It blows my mind when a musician that is that good, something very basic like reading music, he's like, I don't do that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to. You're right. It's like he just hears it and just knows exactly what to play, when to play it, which is amazing. Gary Clark Jr. is also like that. He doesn't know music.
Cool.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm always blown away when I hear musicians that are that good and they just, there's a whole side of their musicianship that they just never had.
Some of us never had to do it. You know, like I was saying before, like the musical theater stuff and those things that sort of like taught me how to read, they weren't things that I was seeking out. It was just, those were things I got thrown into. And I mean, it really helped. I'm very thankful for it. But some people maybe didn't go that route. Like, somebody like Pino or whatever, that like maybe they just joined a band, and that was, you know, that's how they got started. They didn't get started by getting hired for reading gigs, you know. So we all
who plays bass for Bruno Mars? He's one of the best new cats.
His name is Jamario Artis.
Dude, he's one of the newest guys that like I've heard. I'm like, dude, he is so wicked on his feel and vibe and time that I'm just like, man, it's great. It's crazy.
I've not met him yet, but I you know, seen him on, you know, a lot of performances that Bruno's done on talk shows and SNL and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he's great.
So let me ask you another question. There had to be a moment when, you know, you came through the ranks of like being a jazz player, being in musical theater, doing some rock projects, doing some original stuff. When was that moment, the first moment, where you were like, oh my God, I can't believe I do this for a living, and this is who I'm playing with right now, or this is what I'm doing?
I feel that moment pretty much every day. Like, when I'm on stage, like, so many moments on, you know, definitely with Shania, because like that, you know, we'd be behind the curtain, like, about to go on, and then, you know, they play the video, and there's this big thing, and the curtain goes up, and the crowd's going nuts, and every night we did that, I was just like, holy shit, like,
this is crazy,
doing this, and same thing with, like, you know, Air Supply, like every day we on this last tour we were on, I was in a bunch of countries that I'd never been to before,
right,
and seeing different cultures and different people and how they react to the music, and it was just kind of like, man, I can't believe that, like, I get to do this for a living. And, yeah, and even, like, in town, like, when I'm playing with, you know, with my boys, Dirty Diamond, you know, or when I'm playing with Mindy and just, you know, playing with all these great, not just great musicians, great people, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel so fortunate and lucky all the time to just do what I do, because I honestly love doing it. I love playing bass. I love playing low notes.
Well, that's why you get the work and you see the experiences that you have, and it's like, yeah, it makes sense, because you emit that on stage, you emit that in recordings and things you're doing. I want to get to another one of your recordings real quick. Tell me, why don't you set this up? Tell me what the next track you want to play is and what it was.
I got a couple things. Maybe the first thing I should mention, because this is kind of like some new news as well. You mentioned that you will be getting a Grammy certificate for the...
I'm going to get one if it's because it's nominated, but... If it wins, then you'll get
your first Grammy certificate.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just got my first two Latin Grammys.
Oh, dude. High five, man.
The Latin Grammys were just a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
So I played on two records for a Mexican singer named Juan Gabriel, who unfortunately, tragically, just passed away a couple months ago. Yeah, so he did a duo album called Los Duo that I played on, and which, once more, didn't win Grammys or anything. But then they did a follow-up, Los Duo Dos. they did a follow-up, and that just won two Latin Grammys. And then
that's crazy.
And actually, just yesterday, the producer called me in to play on the next album, Los Duo Tres, which is going to be obviously a posthumous album, but we just did a track with Andrea Bocelli yesterday for that record. So one of the tracks I brought in today is a track from the first Juan Gabriel Los Duo record, which is it's called Querida, with another artist named Juanes.
I know Juanes. I've seen them play live.
Yeah. And so this is off the first Los Duo album. Los Duo Dos is the one that just won two Latin Grammys. It won, I think, Album of the Year and Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album.
Did you get that, Eddie? I'm going to test you on your Spanish after this.
I'm going to fail.
All right, here it comes. Yeah.
Cada día, mira mi soledad, que no me sienta nada bien, oh bella, querida. No me ha sanado bien la herida, te extraño y lloro todavía. Mira mi soledad, que no me sienta nada bien.
es cruel. Y lo he pasado yo sin ti así. Ven, ven, ven. Querida, hazlo por quien más quieras tú. Yo quiero ver de nuevo.
Cucaracha.
You were about to get out your maracas. Mm. Hey, how you doing?
Mm.
You're like... So, you know what? When you play something like that, like how do you kind of get well-versed in the style? Do they send you stuff and you kind of do your research or you kind of...
No, that was just... You know, that session for those two records, the two Juan Gabriel records, those were just something that that producer called me for. It was based on a referral. Just kind of went in and heard the stuff, and you know, producers will always give you a little bit of direction, like what they're going for. A lot of times they'll have a reference, you know, like something that they play, just you know, like on a keyboard or something, just to give you a reference of kind of what they want.
Yeah,
and you sort of take that, and then you know, you take your own experience, ideas, whatever, and try to create something, and you just kind of work together to create what works for the song.
I love it. Dude, a very Zen philosopher, man.
Yeah.
When it comes to music, listen to what this guy's saying. You're preaching what I'm screaming inside my head all the time. Tell us some of the big things that are happening for you in 2017.
Some good stuff's coming up. I mean, I'll be back out with Air Supply in January. We've got a bunch of stuff, mainly U.S. and Canada at this point. Although I saw something online saying that... our Asia tour is rescheduled for March, but we haven't got official word of that yet, so we'll see. So doing that, doing some more work with Mindy Hebert and the Bone Shakers. We're doing some stuff on the East Coast, like New York and Boston and some other places. Headlining Stagecoach with Shania.
That's amazing.
Which is going to be great. That
Congrats.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That just got announced a few weeks ago. We just got
the
call
crazy.
For that. So we're, I think it's like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday festival. We're headlining Saturday night.
Dude, that's amazing.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's in April.
That's the Country Coachella.
Yeah. I think it's right. Isn't it right after
it's Coachella? It's the week right after Coachella.
Okay, yeah, so
like I'm amazed that they get like everything squared away. And it's a huge, it's a bigger festival than almost any of the festivals. It's like 100,000 people easily.
Cool. Well, now you're making me nervous.
Dude, it's awesome. And, dude, you're playing a great stage, too, because
I'm stoked.
It's going to be like nothing. Well, you've been playing arenas like all your life. But,
but with Shania, we don't really do festivals. Our tour last year was all arenas. We did one festival. And I love playing festivals. Like, I love playing outdoors. It's they're rowdier. The people are, you know.
And you see more acts, too. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Just the hang is great. Yeah. Like, because you're always hanging with the other acts. You know, you're backstage. You're hanging out. Like, it's fun.
Yeah.
You always have friends that are there. Always friends that are playing with different bands, different artists. And
there's, like, a good hectic about it. It's, like, it's crazy. It's like a circus. Yeah. But you're like, oh, I like this. This is live. When you're at a club and you're just kind of, like, stationary, you coast a little bit. It's like in the experience because you know it's going to be the same from club to club. But there's something good about that
different
too.
Different energy, you know.
Where can people find you, Derek? Give us your website. Tell us all your social media handles.
Yep, DerekFrank.com for all your
spell energy. It out because people are dumb and
that's right. I've seen many different spellings.
That's right.
Cups at Starbucks. so DerekFrank.com.
Yeah, make it
so
easy.
That's, and you know, you can find all the links there, the Instagram. Instagram and Twitter, I think, is Derek Frank Bass. And then there's Facebook and all that stuff.
Well, Derek, you've been an amazing guest. We definitely want to have you back.
Thanks for
having me. So don't travel too far where you can't come in and visit us because you are definitely one of the cats of the cats.
Well,
and
thanks, man. Thanks for
happy holidays, man.
Happy holidays to you.
And thanks for coming in,
great,
dude.
Great
you made us all warm and fuzzy. On behalf of Eddie Pence and myself, we'll see you guys here next week.
Good night.